thank you for listening to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. Larry Suttle, the preaching minister of over 20 years, weekly instructs and encourages those attending the services at the 10th and Broad Church of Christ in Wichita Falls, Texas. Let's join Larry now for this week's lesson.
Three things brought about the lesson this morning. Three things that happened this past week. One of them is the Powerball. I think $580 million, is that where it ended? And the frenzy surrounding the Powerball. You know, I was sort of tempted to do it at $580 million. You know, $400 million, it wasn't worth my time, but you know, it gets... No, just kidding. I don't play the lottery. But the idea that, boy, if I had this, all of my problems would be solved. I want to tell you something. If you have problems that money can solve, you have small problems. Well, that's one thing, the Powerball. The second thing that brought about this lesson, a sweet Christian lady was just observing how that an unfaithful Christian, even a rebellious Christian, was prospering. And then the third thing, I visited a lady in the hospital. She's one of our older members, went in, and she was groaning in pain. I mean, you could tell, bless her heart, she was just in pain. And so I peeked in on her and said, called her name, "This is Larry. Just wanted to come check on you. And I see you're in pain." "Oh, yeah, I've never been in this kind of pain." And I said, "Well, just want you to know I'm praying for you, and I'll just check back, because I know you don't need a visitor right now." She said, no, don't go. And so I said, "Well, I'll pull up my chair." And I did, and just held her hand. And I don't know whether they'd just given her pain medication or what, but I just kind of could tell she was sort of going to sleep maybe. And I would just hold her hand till she fell asleep, which I did. But while I was holding her hand, she said, "Is God punishing me? Is God punishing me?" Now, this is a faithful Christian lady. Well, those three things that happened within a relatively short period of time brought about the lesson that I'm going to preach today. Just reminded me of the necessity to keep our perspective in a wacky world, in a wrong-headed world. All of these things that I have illustrated to you are common thoughts that we've all had. Boy, if I could just win that lottery. Why do bad people prosper and good people seem to not always prosper? And does God punish me with circumstances, even physical pain? And I've chosen as a text this morning Genesis 36. Genesis 36, and I wish you'd turn over there. I'd like to see your face when you get there. Genesis 36. Because what you're going to see in Genesis 36 is just a list of descendants of Esau. And you're going to say, "Now, Larry, why is that a text?" And by the way, we're not going to read it because we don't have the time. But why would that be your text for the kind of sermon you're preaching this morning? Well, just hold that question. First of all, who was Esau? Well, he was the grandson of Abraham. He was the son of Isaac, the older twin brother of Jacob. He is infamous for selling his birthright as the older child. I mean, he would have been a few seconds older because he is a twin but he came out first. Infamous for selling his birthright, which was a big, big deal, for a bowl of beans, which indicates to us very early on the character of this fella, which reminds us that in many ways we are what we are when we come out. Now, I don't know how far we can carry that, but it's a eternal thing. Even at that early point, some basic characters were revealed about selling out for the now, living for the now. Don't worry about tomorrow. Just give me that bowl of beans and I'll sell my birthright. Well, back to Genesis 36. What we see here is a list of wives and children and flocks and herds of Esau. Now, in the ancient world, one's wealth was measured on three things: children, flocks and herds, and land. And Genesis 36 just outlines how much wealth Esau had. One of the wealthiest men probably who ever lived. He had so much that he had to move across the Jordan River south. If you look at a Bible map, southeast of the Dead Sea, and form his own country. And Genesis 36, in many ways, is just a list of all the dukes and chiefs of his family who ruled in Edom. And Edom was a constant thorn in the side of Israel. But there they dwelt in that land southeast of the Dead Sea, a whole country. I mean, Esau was a big guy. Big guy. Now, why do you suppose God would include Genesis 36? See, I'm impressed over and over again how that the Bible is so authentic, it is self-evidently different from any other book that's ever been made. Because I guarantee you, if I was trying to start a religion and I wanted to write a book trying to recruit you to my religion, I would stress how good people live happily ever after, not bad people. But here, once again, the Bible is just so honest with you and with me. And here in Genesis 36, emphasizes the wealth and prosperity of this godless person. Godless. Now, Jacob wasn't a perfect guy. You know that if you've studied the Old Testament. He was a usurper. He was pretty crooked himself. But I tell you what, Jacob had a relationship with God, even to the point of wrestling with God. Esau had none, and apparently no interest. There was no indication of the presence of God in Esau's life. So here we have two great truths from Genesis 36. One is, if this is how God treats godless people, wow, is He ever gracious? What would you expect God to do? You don't obey me, I'll get back at you. Now, last week I said, and I'll stand by it, you don't want to live in such a way that the hand of God is taken away from you. But God doesn't operate on the basis of, you do something bad, I'm going to get back at you. In fact, Jesus said, you live like the Father. You as disciples, you live like the Father. You be sons of your Father in heaven. How? Well, He causes His Son to rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. And is that ever the truth? Oh, what a gracious God that He'll bless even unrighteous, godless people. He is that much full of grace and that even-handed with His love. And it's in that context that Jesus said, you know, you be perfect like your Father in heaven is perfect. And by that He did not mean that you be sinless like God is sinless. No, that would be ridiculous. He meant you be complete in your love like God is complete in His love, even to the point of loving your enemies. That's what God does. That's what Christians do. So that's one great point of Genesis 36, I think. But the other great truth that I want to emphasize this morning is this. Don't mistake, whatever you do, don't mistake material blessing with real blessing. Big mistake. Don't ever mistake material blessing for spiritual blessings or the blessings that really matter, the blessings that will follow you on into eternity. Look at Jacob, this twin brother of Esau. He is God's beloved. He was central to the plan that would eventually bring us the Messiah. Very important to the eternal purpose of God. What did he get? A tent. A tent. He didn't go start his own country. He got a tent. Like his grandfather Abraham. Like his father Isaac. Wandered from place to place, always moving. You see, this is analogous to Christianity. We are aliens and strangers in this world. The patriarchs were wanderers, aliens, strangers, nomads. Never a place they could call home, really. Jesus was. Jesus didn't have a place He could call His own. A tent. And then, to survive, he had to take his clan to Egypt. Egypt! That image, that epitome of godlessness and pagan living and thinking. But to survive, they had to go to Egypt, from where, or at, in which they became slaves at a certain point, and stayed there hundreds of years as slaves, till God led them out. So who's the winner? Who's the loser? Esau? Jacob? You decide. We report, you decide. No, you don't decide. We're told. But before we're told, and I'm going to allude to some New Testament passages here in a moment, I just want to say this. We live in an age that celebrates Esau over Jacob. Even in the Christian world, there is something about one being blessed financially, materially, that says to us, he or she is God's favored one. We would probably put them on television, maybe even Christian television, so-called, and we'd say, son of Isaac does extremely well. What's the secret of your success? Tell us about it so we can be successful too. We want to be material blessed like you, and obviously God wants us blessed. Well, you'd be very premature. Because, again, Esau is used in the New Testament as an example of tragic personal failure. Hebrews 12, 16 and 17. Here's what the Hebrews writer says. See that no one is godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. Afterward, as you know, when he wanted to inherit the blessing, he was rejected. He could bring about no change of mind, though he sought the blessing with tears. Who was the winner? Who was the loser? And prophets of the Old Testament forecast the doom of Edom. In fact, the last prophet of the New Testament, Malachi, we don't use Malachi much except that last few verses of Malachi when we want to talk about stewardship. But Malachi had much more to say than that. And in Malachi chapter 1, it says this, an oracle, the word of the Lord to Israel through Malachi. I have turned his mountains into a wasteland and left his inheritance to the desert jackals. Edom may say, though we have been crushed, we will rebuild the ruins. But this is what the Lord Almighty says. They may build, but I will demolish. They will be called the wicked land, a people always under the wrath of the Lord. You will see it with your own eyes and say, great is the Lord, even beyond the borders of Israel. In the year 2000, I was able to make a trip to the Holy Land, as you know, and got as far south as the Dead Sea. I have never seen in all of my life a more desolate country than that country around the Dead Sea and to the south. With my own eyes, I have seen Malachi's words are true. Oh, we will rebuild. You may rebuild, but I will demolish. So says the Lord. And he did. Turn, if you would, to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6 is Luke's version of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. We are most accustomed to Matthew's accounting. But in many ways, Luke's is my favorite because it words it in a way that, I don't know, just speaks to me regarding the standards of Jesus' kingdom being so much different than the standards of this world, and maybe even you're in my standards. Beginning in verse 20 of Luke chapter 6, looking at his disciples, he said, blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when men hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, because great is your reward in heaven. For that is how their fathers treated the prophets. But woe to you who are rich, for you have already received your comfort. Woe to you who are well fed now, for you will go hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you will mourn and weep. Woe to you when all men speak well of you, for that is how their fathers treated the false prophets. Those are the standards of the kingdom. Paul understood that. The Apostle Paul understood that. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, Paul talked about how that the servants of God, will endure troubles, have and will endure troubles and hardships and distresses and beatings and imprisonments and riots, hard work, sleepless nights and hunger, with weapons of righteousness in the right hand and the left. And then he concludes, we live on, beaten and yet not killed, sorrowful yet always rejoicing, poor yet making many rich, having nothing and yet possessing everything. Those are the words of God. Don't be fooled by appearances. Keep your perspective in a wrong-headed world. Remember Esau.